Hey guys, how's it going? And welcome to the very first episode of Experience Pointers. We are a GM podcast that is looking to talk about our different perspectives at the table and maybe offer up some suggestions for things you can bring into your games. My name is Jordan Caves-Callerman, and with me, right beside me, actually.
Hi, my name is Megan Caves.
And then joining us on Skype.
Hey, I'm Gaurav Galati.
That's all three of us. We are all here. Mm-hmm. We are the three people who will be who are going to be talking. Maybe we can cut this part out.
Nope, definitely not cutting that out. That's in
okay,
there.
Okay, great.
That's in there great. For good.
That's staying. But yeah, this is our very first episode, and because of that, we kind of wanted to spend a little more time up front just talking about who we are and what our perspectives are at the table. So who wants to go first? Who wants to be the first person to do that?
Well, I think you should go first.
I agree.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Is this because I'm already talking?
Yeah.
I'm already talking?
Pretty much.
Okay, awesome. All right, so again, my name is Jordan. I have been playing RPGs since I didn't actually get to play until college. So that was probably around 2005 is when I played. So I've been playing for about 12 years. But before that, I had bought all of the second edition AD&D core books, and I read them as a kid, but none of my friends would ever play with me, so I would just stay up at night reading like all the different spell effects and being like, wow, I bet this game is really fun to play. But I didn't find out until college that it is, actually. It is a lot of fun to play. I started playing D&D 3.5. That is where the bulk of my playing experience began, and I also started DMing with D&D 3.5. I ran a terrible game for a few friends in college and learned a lot from that. And then after that, I kind of specialized in being a DM for new players. So I would like teach people how to play and run them through like the first three levels before our gaming group disbanded and no one ever had the time to meet anymore. After that, I tried to get into D&D 4E. I ran a game for a brief period of time. It wasn't really my thing. 5e seems really cool. I ran an introductory game in that, but that I haven't had a whole lot of experience with that. Where I've really been focusing a lot of my GMing lately is in the Savage Worlds system. I like that system a lot because it gives me the freedom to extemporize at the table. I always felt kind of locked in by D&D for the just because I felt like if my players wanted to go off the rails, I had to either memorize the monster manual or be a really, really quick researcher in order to know stats for different challenges that they might have, and that kind of made me feel like I couldn't maneuver in the way that I wanted to. So Savage Worlds gives me a lot more freedom to do that, and I also really enjoy experimenting with Rules Light systems. A favorite of mine is Roll for Shoes, which is just a ridiculously simple system that I love GMing because I can fully improvise it, and I think it's a lot of fun. But that's the majority of my background and sort of my approach to GMing. I think you should go next, Megan.
Okay. Well, I'm actually a little different here as I have never GM'd or DM'd a game myself, but that is actually something that probably throughout or later on in this podcast that I will try, and it'll be something that we can, you know, I'll talk about, maybe make fun of, whatever, you know, however it turns out.
I mean, you definitely do have plans to GM a game in the near future for the first time.
I do. But my background, I did not get into RPGs at all, and really until college as well, and actually through Jordan, as he's the one who introduced them to me. He was my first DM for 3.5 D&D. And I was terrified that first time, and, you know, we did the classic, everybody introduce yourself at the tavern, and I listed off my low light vision and my height and, I don't know, any other number of things. So, you know, eventually I figured it out.
Hello, I am an elf. I am 5'7". I have low light vision. I have a strength of 16.
Yes, thank you for replaying that for me. But since that point, I played a lot in college, mostly D&D. We played Champions, I suppose, in college.
Oh, we did play Champions,
which
was,
oh man, if you want to roll some dice, that is...
I mean, that's Shadowrun levels of D6s you roll in Champions.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and then mostly we stuck with D&D for a long time, and then eventually I, of course, now play in Savage Worlds, and I've played Roll for Shoes, which we can get into, and Call of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other games here and there, maybe not for campaigns. But yeah, that's pretty much how I got into it. I'm kind of coming at this from the player perspective in a lot of ways. Did I miss anything?
I think one thing that we should probably point out that we haven't yet done is that we are married. Megan and I are married.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Oh come on, guys. Why am I even doing this?
Oh, Grob, did you not know that? I'm sorry, man.
Sorry, we forgot to
Jordan,
tell you.
Jordan, I thought you were single.
Is
that why he's here?
Oh man. Okay. Oops. Well, hold on. It's cool. Let's just move past
the We already got the Twitter handle. We have to go.
We got to do this. I have been your GM primarily for many of the games.
Primarily that and our stage combat professor in college. Yes. Who did marry us, as a matter of fact.
He officiated over our wedding would be a clearer way of saying that.
No, he's married to us.
I was going
to
say, if there's room for another in there, you gotta let me know.
Let's get a fourth.
But mostly it has been you. I've definitely played with a few other GMs here and there, but only really one or two for ongoing campaigns other than Jordan.
But those campaigns have been ongoing for quite a while. So you do have a fair amount of experience with a few different kinds of GMs and a lot of different GM styles.
Yeah.
So Gaurav.
Hello.
Tell us about Gaurav Gulati.
Okay, I will. RPGs for me have been more of a newer thing, sort of. When I was a kid, I got the Dragonstrike board game from somewhere. I don't remember. Maybe it was just like given to me through some dark portal that just came into my bedroom.
I got it from
Half
Price Books.
Okay.
That's where because I also had that board game.
The story with that board game, if you haven't looked it up, it comes with like this VHS video that teaches you how to play. It's like a half hour long video led by this guy in a turtleneck. And it is easily one of like my top 10 favorite things to watch. I love this video. I've watched it every year at least once. And
really?
It's so good. I don't know if you've seen it recently, but it holds up. It's pretty great.
I haven't watched it since I was 12, so...
Please, it's on YouTube. Please watch it. It's pretty great. So basically, this video teaches you how to play this board game, which this board game is just a light version of D&D. It was made by... I believe it was made by TSR, or maybe Wizards of the Coast, one of those
things. I think it was. It was made by TSR because it had the exact same plastic miniatures that the D&D Beginner's Box Set included as well.
Yes. You basically pick a class and one person plays the GM and they pick a scenario and they run you through it. And it's very much D&D. And I read over these rules. I read over the scenario. I watched the video a billion times. I had nobody to play this game with. Nobody was interested. It was so complicated for everybody else. Yep. So I just ran it for myself in my bedroom all the time.
Oh, man. Oh, right. There were one or two solo scenarios in that game, weren't there?
There sure were. Yeah. And so I ran that a bunch of times for myself, and I used to live in California before I lived in California this time. So back then is when I had it, and it's been lost to time. I don't have the board game anymore. I wish I did. I will probably buy it again someday. But that was my first foray into role-playing, and past that, I played D&D 3.5 like 7 or 8 years ago with a DM who was not very good. And then more recently, with my work with Saving Throw, I've been doing a lot more RPGs. So in only the past couple of years have I really been diving deep into role-playing games. And I love it. I mean, I've been playing video games my entire life. And the reason I like RPGs more than video games now is because when I play video games, I tend to get pretty competitive or completionist about them. And with RPGs, you just kind of have to throw that notion away most of the time to have a good time. I mean, you can be like a completionist. Maybe not. You can be.
I guess that depends on your GM, really.
Yeah. But you can be competitive against other players. Doesn't make for a very good game. But I like that it's a game that I can't actually win. Really, you know, in a sense, and it's a game that you can very much lose. You can die at any point, and that sort of stuff excites me because video games nowadays are just getting easier and easier for people to get into and never die. And so I like having a good challenge put in front of me. And the social aspect of it is also incredible. I've made so many friends, you guys included, playing this game games like it. So will you marry me is where this is going.
Oh.
I mean.
Sure, get in here, man.
Why not? Oh, okay, let me jump through the webcam.
Get in this wedding.
So that's me.
That's actually one thing I feel like we haven't really said yet, but you sort of mentioned. We are all, for people who don't know, we all stream RPGs with the channel Saving Throw.
Yes, that's the Twitch channel Saving Throw. We do almost daily. We have an RPG show going up. You can find that at twitch.tv/savingthrowshow. I know, Gaurav, you play in our D&D 5e game.
Mm-hmm. Called Ironkeep Chronicles.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Megan plays in the game that I run, which is called Wild Cards, which is a Savage Worlds Deadlands Reloaded game.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have a Star Wars Edge of the Empire game. We have a bunch of different stuff. We're bringing in a bunch of new shows now, so you can definitely find us there. And we can talk more about that later, I guess. But I feel like we gave everyone a pretty good idea of who we are. Should we dive into our topic of discussion this week?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So I think what we all decided would be a great way to start this off is to talk about why we think it's important for everyone who plays RPGs to be a GM at some point. Maybe not necessarily become a permanent GM, but try out game mastery from time to time. And why we think that's important and how it can actually make you a better player and just a better, like, RPG gamer overall.
Well, I mean, having not ever GM'd myself, I mean, I can see the value in it just from, like, my college experience in college as a drama major, as an acting, acting emphasis is what I'm looking for. We were also required to do props, to do lighting, to do costume on shows, to do set, to build the sets, to design. I mean, we did everything. We ran sound. We did everything. And there's value in that simply because I understood what it took for other people to do their jobs alongside my job and vice versa. All the tech people had to act. And it was very valuable. And I think it's very important because it teaches you to sort of respect what everybody else does. And I think that's true. I mean, yes, this is a game. This is something that we're doing for fun. But you want everybody to be having fun and to be happy. And I'm not saying that if you've never GM'd and you're only a player that you're just a jerk. But I do think it's beneficial to sort of know what happens on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I think for me, I never wanted to be a DM back when I was playing D&D, but I had a group of friends who wanted to play, and none of them wanted to be the DM, and everyone was sort of like, oh, you like to read, why don't you be the DM?
You nerd.
I was like, you like okay, to yeah, I like to read books that are, you know, fiction. I don't necessarily want to sit down and read a rule book, but I was like, fine, I'll do it. So I read through it, I tried to figure it out, I was like, you know, looking up stuff on the internet, resources like that, and I gave it a try. And it's hard. There's a lot of stuff that goes into GMing a game. And I was like, I feel like I'm doing a terrible job. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm kind of like making this up as I go along because all these situations come up that even though I've read the rules, like I don't remember what I'm supposed to do here. But I kept doing it and I kept trying it out. And over the years, I did it so much that now I identify as a GM. I don't identify as a player anymore. In fact, while I do enjoy playing RPGs from time to time, I would much rather be GMing a game. That's kind of like the full circle that I did coming into it. Gaurav, you, if I am not mistaken, you recently started GMing your own campaign for the very first time. Like, this is the first time you've been a DM for D&D?
Yes. So it's actually almost been a year running it, but
really,
we meet so rarely that it's still only been like maybe like 14, 15 sessions in, just because of scheduling. Oh, wow. Stuff. So, but yeah, it's been almost a year because I think we started it in August of last year or September of last year. I've been running Curse of Strahd, which is a 5e adventure. And, I love this book. I've been reading it, ever since I got it. And, it has lots of good ideas to do like a horror themed D&D campaign.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot running it for almost a year now. And, you know, one of the things I've learned is that you you definitely don't need to know all the rules when you start dungeon mastering. I know, like, the book, I have the DM's guide right here, and it's a huge book, but you definitely don't need to know every page of that book. And I know that seems like something you should do, but, like, no, like, there's very specific stuff that you'll need to begin with, and you can look up stuff at the table. Like, you're going to be doing that no matter what. Like, it's gonna happen.
Right.
Well, I think the question that I have is, how do you both feel like GMing has made you a better player? Or how have you, if you have had a player that started GMing, like, what was the difference between that player if you've had that experience? Does that make sense? If you had a player that was just a player and then they tried GMing, they came back and played in your game, did it change anything?
I don't know that I've had that specific experience where I had a player that became a GM and then still played in my game, so I can't really speak to that. But I can say one of the biggest things that you learn as a player when you try and GM is you learn the things that you, the players, can do at the table to help your GM out, to make everyone's experience of the game that much more positive. Like, you learn the things that that are a struggle for the GMs, and you kind of learn about the things that the players can do at the table to sort of take that load off in a way. You guys know what I mean? Like,
I feel like
each new edition of D&D in the Dungeon Master's Guide, they've been really good about talking about more of the less about just game rules and more about also the experience of playing and running the game at the table. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of newer RPG books have good information about that stuff in them as well. But just if it's something as simple as, like, as a player, you decide, like, hey, I'll keep track of initiative order. Like, that way the GM doesn't have to do it. I will be the one who keeps track of initiative order. I mean, that's an important thing as a GM, to learn how to delegate some of that stuff to your players. But if a player speaks up and takes the initiative to take some of that load off of your shoulders, I feel like that's super helpful as a GM.
Here's a question, just along with what you're saying. So being married to a GM, you don't necessarily tell me everything, of course, that you're going to do in a session.
No,
but there are a lot of things that I pick up from you because you go, oh man, I need this, I need that. How do you feel like it's, I mean, I know it's different, but I'm just curious, in your mind, how's it different than, how are those two things different than having a player who is a GM and just essentially being married to a player who goes, oh, my husband wants me to do this, this will be helpful for him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Grav, what's your experience in that? Like, being married to someone who GMs? Like,
Well,
I mean, because you're a part of this relationship now.
Well, clearly I am. I mean, that's a very unique situation you guys have. And, I mean, I'm dating someone who I also am running a game for. She's part of that Curse of Strahd campaign. And in that, like, we probably talk about the game the most because, like, obviously I don't live with the other players. Save for maybe Dom, I do talk to him about it a lot, because he has a lot more experience in RPGs than even me, so I like to get his perspective on how things are going.
Sure.
But playing with her, like, I actually knew when we started the game with her, maybe like 3 or 4 sessions in, that she didn't click with her own character. Like, she didn't like who she was playing. And I felt that, and I was like, why is that? Why do you feel like you're not clicking with this person? And she couldn't figure it out. And, like, she does improv as well, for fun and maybe for profit someday. But she loves playing characters in improv. And in D&D, she was just kind of playing herself in a muted way. And I was like, well, I'm going to give you the chance to have your character leave the game for a while and come back a few months later, because she just had some life stuff going on. So she literally had to take a break. And when she came back, she decided to do a new character who had a very clear character, like, voice and opinion, and it came from a totally different location. And she immediately loved that character. She immediately made strong choices with that character that she enjoyed. And I like this character a whole lot more, too. So what was the question again? I'm sorry. How did I get here?
I mean, the question was kind of like, when you're in a relationship with someone who's GMing, mm-hmm. A game that you're playing in, like, how does that change the dynamic? But
really, though, the real question was,
does it change the dynamic?
How The real question, though, and that was sort of a question on top of a question. The real question, or the first question, was how has it made you a better player since becoming a GM?
Sure. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, on the relationship aspect, that's a bit off topic for what we're trying to talk about. But I would like to kind of touch on what Gaurav was talking about, because you've been DMing your game for about a year now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you feel, like, since you started doing that, has it changed your approach at the table when you go in as a player?
I don't think so. Not that I can think of actively in my head. Okay. Like, I haven't thought about, like, oh, this happened at my game, I shouldn't. I metagame less now. Actually, I will say that much, because I have players at my table who, like, metagame outwardly. They do it pretty obviously, and most of the time people call them out on it. But now when I do it on, like, a saving throw show, I try to stop myself before it happens, because I just don't think it's very fun.
So it's something that's, so that sounds like something that when you're GMing the game, that is something that annoys you that the players do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that accurate? Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In that way, you basically learned, like, oh man, that's a bad habit that some players can have. And when I'm playing in games, I want to stop doing that kind of stuff so that I don't make my GM feel the way I feel when my players do that to me. One thing I'll say that this is kind of brought up for me, ever since I started GMing, I feel like I've gotten a much clearer idea of the types of games that I enjoy playing in. Like, if that makes sense. Like, before, my first D&D game that I ever played in, it was great. It was awesome. The guy who ran it was really, like, math and rules focused. So, like, anytime we were like, oh, cool, we have enough money to add an enchantment to our weapons, like, what sort of stuff should we do? He's like, well, I recommend adding every magical damage type to your weapons, because that's the most efficient thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, anytime we found, like, some sort of, like, relic weapon in the game, it was always like, it's an acid, fire, freezing, holy, like, it just sort of, like, added a D6 of different damage types, mm-hmm. and it was just, like, a handful of those. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's cool, but, like, I'm way more interested in finding a deck of many things.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
My thing was always like, I wish I was finding more interesting magic items. I've always been really attracted to the magic items that are useless at the surface level, and then figuring out, like, okay, but what can I do with these? Like, how can I make these actually useful? But I didn't know. I hadn't played enough. I didn't know, like, what to expect from the game. So I was sort of like, okay, yeah, it does make sense. This weapon now does, like, a bunch of extra D6s, and I can get around a lot of damage resistance. So sure, I guess that's cool. But when I started GMing, I kind of organically realized that what was more important to me was the narrative and the story, and, like, making sure everyone was kind of, like, on board with this collaborative, like, adventure that we were building together. And so I started to realize, oh, I run games that way because that's the kind of game that I always wanted to play in.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me identify the things at the table that I really respond to positively. And I think it made me kind of zero in as a player on the things that I wanted to get out of game sessions, if that makes sense.
So I think that, being the only one who has yet to GM, I think you both should pitch to me, like, your elevator pitch or whatever, why I need a GM. Because at this point, I feel like what you just said, you can get as a player too. If you play enough sure. games, like, for me, I like horror-focused games. I like mystery. I like dark, scary things. I find that more fun the more I play. I don't like D&D as much. I prefer, I like Savage Worlds right now, because that's kind of what we're on, but I prefer more rules-light systems, because I want to focus on the story. I don't want to focus on the mechanics. Though also I need enough mechanics that it's not just willy-nilly, whatever. That drives me bananas too. So I have figured that out as a player, but what am I going to gain more being a GM?
That is an interesting question, Megan. Yeah. Gaurav, do you want to try and field that one first?
I do. I actually have a question for you first, though, Megan.
Okay.
What is your, as a person who's never GM'd before, what is your biggest fear GMing?
Well, I think it's that I won't be able to, I mean, so my idea of GMing is really based upon the people who have GM'd for me, and Jordan being one of the main ones, I sort of look at that as I suppose the bar I'm trying to hit, and he, I feel like, has these crazy characters that come out of nowhere, and he just seems to come up with these ideas so quickly that in my mind I'm like, oh, how did I do that? Mm-hmm. So there's that. But also the thing that has really deterred me is the amount of reading. Just like he said earlier, you like to read. I know about myself that I need to start with a very rules-light system, which I was looking at doing Magic and Mischief, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which seems like an interesting system. But even that still is a bit intimidating. So those are really the two main things, I think, that make me nervous.
Okay, so to distill that a bit, your big deterrences are you don't want to have to do a lot of reading, and you feel like you won't be able to live up to the level of some of the GMs that you have played in their games?
It's not just about living up to a level. It's more about not... Well, maybe it is, but that's not quite how I look at it in my brain. I think it's just like, I won't have interesting enough characters. I won't interact with people in a normal way. If they go off of my idea of where I thought we were going, I'll go, ooh, I don't know what to do now.
So I could be wrong, and I'd like your opinion on this too, Garat, but I feel like those are two very common reasons why people don't want to GM games.
Yeah.
I think everyone perceives like, oh, I don't want to do all the work ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And then also I'm worried that, you know, my game's not going to be good. Like I won't engage my players. I won't know how to react and flow with the story. Like, all of those things that a GM does, like, you're worried, like, I don't think I can do those successfully. I think I might suck, and, like, the game will suck.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty common. I mean, were those your concerns before you started this Curse of Strahd game?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's my concern every time I run a game. Like, it's always in the back of my mind that, oh, what if this isn't going to be good? What if, especially when you're running for, like, I'm not a regular GM at Saving Throw, but whenever I do one-offs, that's always, like, in the back of my mind, because we're doing it for essentially a TV show. You know, you got to think about other people's enjoyment and not just the people at the table and yourself. But usually it turns out if you and your players are having fun, then the crowd watching is also having fun. So
I think that's the same in a home game too.
Yeah, mm-hmm, like, absolutely. I think so
too. If you are having fun as a GM, mm-hmm, as long as it is not selfish fun, mm-hmm, as long as it is outwardly focused fun, your players will have fun too.
Yeah. So I would say my biggest tip, Megan, for your first time GMing and
What's your pitch? What's your pitch, Garav? How are you going to get her to GM for the first time?
This is my pitch. Pick a system that you've already picked one, which is called
Magic and Mischief.
Magic and Mischief.
And that gets rid of that first deterrent because the entire rule sheet is one PDF page.
Easy.
That's the entire rules for the system. It's rules light.
Perfect.
Which brings its own issues into it, and maybe we can talk about that in a future show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's picked the system.
The way to get the best game possible for your first game is to just get a group of players that you trust and that they know what you're trying to do. Like, if you get, obviously, me and Jordan at your table, we know it's your first time GMing, and we know that we can't, like, throw you for a loop. The entire game.
We could, but we're not jerks.
Right.
And we don't want to.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin this marriage because of a game, you know? We don't want to do that. And
good point, Garav.
Yeah, that was a joke. We're not married. So what I'm saying is, yeah, get people who you trust and that you like and that you can mesh with well. And I think you already knew off the top of your head at least four or five people who you can do this with, and you're guaranteed to have a good time. And after that, it just becomes, you know, you practice more and you get better. Like with anything else, you just keep on doing it.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think my pitch to you, Megan, for being a GM, what would be that it is a great way to conquer all of your fears at the gaming table as a player and as a GM. So you talked about how when I GM, I have a bunch of over-the-top characters that seem to come out of nowhere when I play NPCs, I assume is what you were talking about.
Yeah.
In doing that, over the course of the time that I have been a GM, I have learned to just be like, I'm just going to go for it with this NPC, and they're going to be like this. And sometimes it sucks horribly, and you fall flat on your face, and it just doesn't work. But the great thing about it is you can just move past it. There's several more NPCs for you to portray later on. It's a great way to experiment and try that stuff. And when you get rid of that sort of trepidation to approaching characters at the table, it's so much easier to not have as much fear when you are being a player as well. So, like, now when I'm creating a new player or a new character for a game, I'm, like, I'm much more likely to try something outlandish or something that would initially have given me pause or made me go, I don't know if I can make this character interesting or I don't know if I can make this compelling. I just go, you know what? Screw it. I have this, I have an impulse, I have an instinct that I can do this, and I'm just going to go with it and see how it goes. And I know that even if it doesn't work right away, give me a few sessions, I'll fine-tune some things, and I'll figure out a way to make it work. And I have greater confidence at the table as a player in that way because I've GM'd and had the chance to try it out in several different ways.
And do you feel like you make your GM's lives easier at the table, having been being a GM? And
I hope so. I mean,
so that's going to depend on the GM, because not mm-hmm. every GM likes strong character, likes the sort of strong characterization that I tend to put into my
right.
characters.
But that's not really what I'm referring to. I'm just saying, having been a GM mm-hmm. and then going and playing at someone else's table, do you feel like, oh, because I'm a GM, I think I'm more helpful to this GM?
Yeah, I think it makes me feel like I understand what the frustrations are behind the screen. So I know one of the things that I always try and do as a player is encourage all of the other players at the table to focus on action. So rather than having like a bunch of time where we're stalled around deciding whether or not we should take the left path or the right path or whether or not we should try and open this door, like I always am trying to get the group together and motivated to like just pick a choice and move forward, because as one of our GMs was fond of saying, you know, in any direction lies the story, but you very rarely move anything forward if you're sitting in a room having a discussion for an endless amount of time. So I think it has helped me learn to guide a table both from the player seat and the GM seat towards action and moving. So yeah, I do think I can at least be that kind of ally at the table as a player now, due to the experience I gained as a GM.
Well, I mean, I sort of feel like we discussed a lot of the aspects of this particular topic. Should we go on to the question we had today?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, did we arrive at any sort of like thesis? It kind of feels like, I mean, for me, I do think that being a GM makes you a stronger player just because mm-hmm. it broadens your understanding of what's happening at the table. A lot like you said, Megan, with the drama degrees, which mm-hmm. I also have from the same program.
Well, that's where we met.
So. Yeah, like knowing all of the things that go into creating a production makes you a more like globally minded performer, because you realize the work that everyone's doing around you in order to make things happen.
Honestly, I think at the end of the day, over anything else, it makes you nicer. And I think that's really invaluable, because you acknowledge the work. I mean, it's just like you hear people say, oh, well, if you go to a restaurant, it'd be really great if you'd worked at a restaurant. People who've worked at restaurants and then go and eat tend to treat waiters differently. Not to say that everyone, that's across the board true, mm-hmm. but I think it's just that idea of, it's very hard to understand someone else's experience until you experience it yourself. You can be empathetic, and hopefully that we all are, or whatever, but I do think in general, if I'm at a table and I've experienced the work that my GM has before, and maybe they're doing something that I would find frustrating, I can go, you know what, I've GM'd, I bet they're dealing with this, I'm going to give them a break, or whatever.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a good point. I think it makes you a more grateful player.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think you understand the work that went into it, and you appreciate so much more what your GMs do.
And if you're grateful, the GM's going to feel that. You know, it all comes back to creating a great atmosphere at the table.
Yeah.
And that is, having been at some tables that had horrible atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's invaluable, especially to an ongoing game. If everyone wants to be there mm-hmm. and is excited, yeah. People are going to make it work.
Yeah. And I will also say that, on the other side of this, if you're a GM going into a game as a player, don't backseat GM. Don't say well, this is how I would do things at somebody else's table. Like, especially not in the first session. Like, wait maybe like 4 or 5 sessions, and then like, if you think they're doing something that could be wrong, or maybe you could change a way they do and make it better for the game, do it like behind the scenes. Don't do it in the middle of a game. Like, pull them to the side after or before and just have a talk, GM to GM. They'll understand, like, you're only trying to make the game better, but doing it in the middle of a game in front of all the players, like, that, you're not going to win any tables doing that.
That is the wrong way to do it. I think we've presented our cases and talked about this a little bit. Yeah, I think we should move on to our next segment. So Gaurav had the idea that we should find questions that were posted on the RPG Reddit or some of those related subreddits that maybe didn't get a whole lot of attention, and kind of address them and see if we can answer or add any richness to the explanations of that. So you have one for us, right, Gaurav?
Yeah. So this is from the D&D subreddit, and the question is, I played for the first time, and I've got a question. That's the title of it. Here's the question. My friend was really good at explaining the rules, but one thing that popped in my head that I didn't ask is this. One of the players was taking notes. Should I do this? Is it bad or rude not to? This was by Dylan the Villain. This was a few weeks ago that I saw this question pop up, and I saved it.
Okay.
I gotta be honest, I am a horrible note taker. This is not just in my gaming experience. I was horrible in college. So I do not take good notes. And I probably rely too heavily on the other players at the table and the GM to remember or have taken better notes. So I think it depends, in my opinion, on your GM. It depends on, like, the type of story that they're telling. But I do think that it is beneficial, probably, to, mark down people that you talk to. And honestly, it makes your experience richer, because as a character, if you can recall something from however many episodes, I guess is how I want to put it, but sessions ago, that maybe you wouldn't have been able to otherwise because you didn't write it down. It can create a really cool story, and it can offer your GM something. And honestly, it's just helpful. It's a helpful thing to do. I wish I were better at it. Maybe one day I'll figure it out, and I do try. But I do find it very difficult. That's sort of my view on it. But I do think it depends upon the game and the GM.
Sure. Well, what do you think, Gaurav? What's your take on this?
I'm sort of in the same boat. I'm pretty bad at taking notes, especially when I'm running a game. Like, there's so much going on, and I always want the focus to be in front of me and not behind the screen. So I always try to take notes, but usually what happens is after the game ends, I just sit there for like 20 minutes writing down what happened.
I think that works too. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So I just sit there, and because it just happened, it's fresh in my mind, I just write down as much as I can remember. And the good thing about my game is I have a player who's dedicated enough who does like a character journal for every session from his point of view. So I read that, and that also pops up a few things in my head. And I've definitely made new story threads out of that kind of stuff, which is awesome. If you have dedicated players who do that kind of stuff, like, crave those people. Like, just hold them close. Never let them go.
Marry them.
Marry them. Yeah. Marry everyone.
Do you do that both as a GM and as a player? Do you take notes afterwards
as a player? As a player, it's easier for me to take notes at the table. Me as a person, me as a Gaurav, I don't write enough in real life with my hand. Like, there's not many reasons for me to do that because I'm usually in front of a computer like 90% of the time. All my DM notes are also online, and I'm trying to shift away from that a little more and more as I'm playing RPGs and write more on paper. I as a player, I'm getting better at it. I have a journal now, and I write it as I'm playing, which has been super helpful.
I will say, to answer the question more specifically, I do think it is a polite thing to do to take notes at the table, because it's very helpful for the GM to have other people. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It shares the weight of the GM's responsibilities if they are not the sole person who has to remember what happened every session. For me as a GM, I don't require it. I'm not going to be punitive to my players if they don't take notes or don't remember something. Like, I'll re-explain who someone is, but I do enjoy throwing in Easter eggs that allude to things that might have come up before. And sort of like what you were saying, Megan, it does add to the richness of the player's experience, I feel like, if they remember things that happened before. So I think something to try, two things. I have seen it suggested that the chronicler position kind of rotate each game session. So like somebody else is responsible for essentially taking the minutes of the session each game. So not everyone has to take notes if they don't want to, but it's something that everyone sort of shares. So like this week, you're going to do it, Gaurav. Next week, Megan's going to do it. The week after that, I'm going to do it. And then they recap at the beginning of each other session. Well, hold on. You had something to say about that, Megan.
What if Gaurav did it, he did a great job, and then Megan takes notes, and hers are horrible?
I feel like that is an impetus for Megan to get better at taking notes, because if she feels like every session that she takes the notes on, and she comes back with the recap next time, she's like, yeah, we went on a boat, and we met a guy who sells meat.
Yeah.
So this is a complete separate note-taking issue. I don't know what's important enough to take notes on, and that tends to be my problem, is I would spend the whole time not engaging and writing.
So that would be my next point that I was going to say is, if you're new to games and you don't know what to write down, a great thing to do is just to be like, write down the names of people who you meet who give you a task. Just know their name. So like if you go to a town, it's like, oh, the mayor needs to talk to you. We got a goblin problem. And you go and talk to the mayor, write down the mayor's name. If someone who gives you a task gives you the name of anyone in particular who might be important to the success of that task, write them down. And then write down any place names that are given to you. Just start with that. Just start with like trying to distill down like, okay, this is clearly important to what we're doing in this session or what we might be doing in a future session because this is the quest that has been given to us. So I can safely assume it would be good to know these people's names. And we're going to the Tower of Frozen Doom, so that's probably a good name to write down as well. Like, just start there. If you have at least that much information, that's a really good starting point so that your player, your character, and you as the player are at least aware of your general goal and the general places you need to be heading. I think that's a good way to get started.
Another way I would avoid that problem of, like, someone being good at taking notes and someone being bad is that maybe just ask your table. Maybe one person just loves doing it. Like, true. Maybe they just love taking notes and you don't have to rotate. Like, just read the table and ask around because it could happen. It could happen.
I've definitely had tables in which someone, like, seemed to very much enjoy it. Sort of maybe along the lines of your player who likes to write sort of their own journal.
Yes.
Definitely experienced that before.
But you know what? I'll say going along with that, maybe pitch in for their share of the pizza every now and then because they're doing more work than everyone else at the table.
Sure.
Show them you appreciate what they're doing from time to time. I think that's just good table etiquette, which would be another fun thing to talk about down the line. But I think we pretty much answered that question, at least with our opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should we wrap this up?
Yeah,
I think so.
Let's do it.
Okay. I will say, you can find me. My name is Jordan Caves Callerman. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Callerman. That's JordanCallerman. And you can hit me up there. Where can people find you, Megan?
You can find me on Twitter as well, and it's just at my name. So that's Megan Caves, and it's spelled MegHanCaves.
And how about you, Gaurav?
You can find me on Twitter at DoubleGXG. So that's the word double, not two GXGs. So DoubleGXG on Twitter and Instagram and probably a bunch of other things if you look hard enough.
And then if you want to follow Experience Pointers Podcast, you can find our very new Twitter handle.
Super new.
At EXP Pointers Pod. So that's EXP and then Pointers starts the new words. There's really two P's in there. Pointers Pod, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or search EXP Pointers Podcast and it should pop up.
Yeah, and, you know, feel free to send us a DM on Twitter if you have any questions about anything we talked about today, or if there's any questions that you want us to maybe answer on a future show, like, hit us up and let us know if there's anything we can do to help out, or, you know, just give us your opinions on what we're talking about. Fight with us. Tell us you totally disagree with us. Whatever you want to do, you can do that at any of those places. And then again, you can also find all of us on the Twitch channel Saving Throw. So that's twitch.tv/Saving Throw Show.
And also you could follow us on Saving Throw's Twitter, which is, or any of the, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's all Saving Throw Show.
So I think that's pretty much it for this first episode. Does anyone have anything that they want to address real quick before we wrap it up?
Nope.
No, I think we're good here.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Right. Well, thank you all for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.